there. It's Conscious Living. In Power Radio, I'm Wendy Garrett. My guest, Tim Skolion, is a photographer. Now, this isn't how he started out. He does ghost photography. How he started out was giving tours. And so we're going to have him give the background and everything, because once you've seen these, it's unhard. I mean, once you've seen them, you can't unsee them. So with the pictures, I'm talking about haunted historic colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. There's a lot of history here that goes with the pictures, and it might be a good reason why the ghosts show up. But the way the ghosts show up is really impressive. I haven't seen these kinds of pictures before. And well, I might have with the ITC communication that when they've tried to do some of those, but this is entirely, I think, new in terms of putting ghost photos together. So judge for yourself. Okay. You'll have to see them. This is amazing. How did you even get started in this? Because this isn't something that people, I mean, a lot of times you go out and you think, I'm just going to take some pictures, or I've seen a picture, but you can't necessarily duplicate it or come up with something this creative. What did you do to jumpstart your technique?
Well, this is something that completely got me by surprise. Had anybody ever asked me if I was taking ghost pictures in my future, I would have told them they're crazy because I was a skeptic. But I started out in Colonial Williamsburg as a tour guide during the daytime. So I was giving mostly historic information and stuff about the 18th century way of life to groups of people that had come here. And the company that I worked for asked me if I would also give ghost tours in the evening. So I said, sure, why not? I memorized the script. I passed the test and I started taking people out. And this skeptic started seeing people get photos that were paranormal on their cell phones. And this was back in 2011. And as you know, the cell phone cameras were not that good. So I thought, if I could get down to the very same places that I saw people get photos on their cell phones and use my professional equipment, perhaps I could get something better. And so that started a two-year odyssey. Well, it's turned into 7 years now, but it's 2 years from my first book and over 10,000 photos. So it wasn't like I was getting a ghost on every photo. Out of the 10,000 photos, there were about 230 that were good enough to use in the book.
See, that's what's so funny. The numbers, the volume, the pictures, this, and they even have, when you had the book was at Barnes & Noble and you got one in the picture in the front of the Barnes & Noble window. It was like, okay, so are they just everywhere?
Absolutely. I've seen statistics where there are well over 1 billion people dead and the ghosts are absolutely everywhere. Of course, I was shocked to see them in the display window along with my book. I was merely there to take a photo of the display of my book.
Yeah.
That was a unique author experience for me, something that I had always dreamed about. You know, there's my book in this big window on display. So I was totally unexpecting to get ghosts in the same photo that I got my book.
Okay, well, they're kind of the star. So there's the cameo saying, hey, gotcha, thanks, see ya.
There you go.
All right, what I would like to do for people who aren't familiar with Williamsburg and the background, there's a reason the ghosts might show up and be pretty prolific in this area. So if you could give us a little background, a little history, because this is something, this is your forte, given all the tours, set the scene for us.
All right, well, there's awful lot of war and death. There have been problems that started all the way back in 1622 when they had a massacre of the colonists by the Indians. And then pretty soon there were reprisals against the Indians. And after that came the Revolutionary War. Colonial Williamsburg was heavily involved in that. They had two hospitals here. And so the Revolutionary War soldiers that were placed in the hospitals, because of the very poor conditions in the medical field back then, a lot of infection, a lot of those men died. And so we have mass graves of Revolutionary War soldiers here. In fact, they claim there is an unfound mass grave of French troops from the Revolutionary War Battle of Yorktown. Then after that, we have the Civil War Battle of Williamsburg. Some call it the Civil War Battle Fort Magruder, but it's the same thing. And there were close to 4,000 casualties during that battle. And this tiny little town of less than 2,000 at the time was completely overwhelmed with the dead and the dying from that battle. I know it's not the same type of statistics that you hear from, say, Gettysburg, but it was still overwhelming for a small town of less than 2,000. And then after that, you're going to get into lynchings and problems with the KKK. And all of that history, all of that death is a good backdrop for what I would call one of the most haunted cities in the country.
Wow. Okay. And with that, that's at first you were just giving history tours, and then you blossomed into the ghost tours. But you also mentioned about traveling around, and I wanted to, from the blog, there's Antelope Canyon in Page, Arizona, and you have pictures, and it shows some of the ghosts in the mist. I have a picture of what I call the Christmas ghost, because I'm standing in front of the Christmas tree taking a picture, and right beside me, alongside, is this wonderful little white misty cloud. I haven't done anything to the photo, but now that I've seen what you're doing, I thought, you know what, I might just go back and kind of tweak that and see if I can pull anything out, because other people would say, oh, well, that's just a, you know, something from the camera, your shirt got in the way, or it's the little, whatever, the tag on the camera. There's nothing on the camera. I didn't have a shirt that was in the way. I know it's missed. So that's part of, I think, what you're getting too when you first started was, do you really know what you're taking is legit? But looking at the photos, to me, I've seen enough of them to know that this is just something that's a phenomena that's out there. And once you learn a technique, you can actually pull a little bit more information forward and get rid of some of the noise. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And what I've discovered as far as these mists go is that they travel in groups in these mists. And so if you take a very close look, you know, zoom in on that mist you have for your Christmas ghost, take a look and see if you could see, usually the eyes show up the best. Mm-hmm. You may see multiple pairs of eyes. You may see a partial face, or you may see even several faces, like the photos that I took in Antelope Canyon, where you can make out,
yeah,
at least four or five different faces in that mist.
You also mentioned a psychic who talked to you about that. Share that, because this is, I think, is fascinating too.
Well, she said that the ghosts move around together. They sort of pull their energy together, and that's how we get the mist, and they're capable of incredibly fast movement. And that's, by the way, that's one of the reasons why I think that it takes so many pictures to capture these ghosts, because they're there for like a split second and they're gone.
Yeah.
And that's the case, particularly for one of the best photos that I've ever taken. And it was of what I believe to be more ghosts in one photo than anybody's ever captured. And that was at the Colonial Williamsburg magazine. And out front of that is where the Virginia militia was standing. They were all lined up as if in formation, as if they were still drilling from 300 years ago. It was amazing.
See that? And yeah. So these books, there's two of them. The first one, was it, well, a couple years ago when you did the first one? Now the second one, because there's like the back to back.
Right. 2016 was the first, and this year was the second.
Okay. So with this, are you able to see better your focus? Are you able to kind of hone out an area that might be a better place for you to photograph because you've improved, do you think?
Absolutely. I improve all the time. And not only that, but getting back to what you were saying about the psychic, I had done a book presentation up in Maryland right after the publication of my first book. And the psychic there, he said that he recognized me without even seeing me before. And he said that he knew what I did. And he also knew at that time that the ghost knew what I was doing. So that was kind of interesting for me as a person that I don't believe I have any psychic abilities. And here I'm being told that the ghosts know what I'm doing, and they know that I'm out trying to photograph them.
Yes. That's the funny thing about ghosts. They know just everything they need to know about us, and we think they don't exist. And when they want to tweak somebody, they know exactly where the weak spots are, and what you might be frightened of. What I wanted to, there was a blog post I did when I interviewed you before for Wendy's Coffee House, and what I shared on there's a picture, and this was somebody who had gone to the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, and she knew my brother and said, "Here, pass this on to Wendy and see what she thinks." And it has that mist in the very front of the picture. This was something she was just taking a picture of the Stanley Hotel. She had no intention of getting a ghost. She just was wanted to take a picture out at it, and it's in front of it. It's at night, and there's this fantastic mist, and it's really obvious. You can see at least one picture of a face. It looks like it morphs almost into two, where they're looking at different directions. But this is something that I think, when people, once they realize that if you go to a place that is known to be haunted, you might have an opportunity to catch something you wouldn't see otherwise, because it's much more active in that space, like you're talking about where you are. And that, to me, is incredibly active.
Absolutely right. And sometimes you'll catch the ghosts in some of the strangest places. Let me give you an example of that. I was at the Peyton Randolph House, and this was back in August. And I had gone there because in my first book, I had captured the face of a small child. I think it's a little girl. And somebody had told me that they saw the capture that I had taken in the book, and they believed that there was a painting of a little girl at the Peyton Randolph House that I could match that photo to. So I was excited about that because, that there's proof, there's a veracity to my photo that, hey, there's a little girl that really looked like that. So
Yes.
I went to the house, I did the tour, specifically looking for a painting of a small girl. And naturally, I took my ghost camera and I took photos in every room. I was with a group of tourists, and I'm sure that they had no idea what my intentions were, but I went through the whole house and discovered no painting of a little girl. So I asked the interpreter at the end of the tour if he knew about a painting and if it was somewhere that we hadn't been in the house, and he was a little bit condescending with me, and he said no, the Randolphs didn't have any children. So I wasn't going to argue with him because I had been told this by one of the workers at Colonial Williamsburg. But I went home, I looked at the photographs, and to my surprise, in Betty Randolph's room, that was Peyton Randolph's wife, just the corner of the bedroom mirror was showing in the photo. And in that small corner was the face of a woman that I'm assuming was Betty Randolph's personal slave assistant. They called her Eve, and that's who's rumored to be haunting the Peyton Randolph House, one of the many, I should say. And I captured her face quite clearly in the mirror in the daytime in a corner that I hadn't even noticed when I was taking photos of the bedroom that there was even a mirror there, because most of the I guess it was a sheet, some sort of covering that they had as a canopy over the bed, covered the vanity mirror so that you couldn't really see it. It was only a small corner. And so there was the place where I'm taking photos, not expecting to get any ghosts, and I captured something that was really profound.
I also want to address, okay, if you're listening, the website, there are a couple of them. You can go to ghostphotographer.com, and then the other one's a blog site for WordPress, and it's Tim Skolion WordPress, and either one of those. But I'm on the Ghostographer site right now and looking at, there are four images, and one of these is also from that the Peyton Randolph House. This it's the ghost who committed suicide.
Yeah, that's the one we were just talking about.
Yeah,
The
that's yeah, go ahead.
ghost is purportedly was a man very distraught that came into the C. Peyton Randolph in the 18th century. And while he was waiting, he must have decided that he couldn't take it anymore, and he pulled out a pistol and put it in his mouth and ended his life. So that's why the whole bottom area of his face is missing.
See, that to me was that's an affirmation. This is validation of what you're doing, saying, look, this is an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, and I was surprised that I had captured the face. Like I said before, that was my very first face that I ever captured. And I was disappointed that the lower part of his face was missing. I couldn't understand why until somebody that worked at the Peyton Randolph House was able to give me the background. And then suddenly, like you said, I had affirmation that I had really captured a character that had been in there and ended his life there.
Now, you have terminology for some of these. You call, there are certain ones. Can you help us with that? Because one you call the classic white. There are others that you define as a different type of photo. How does that work?
Well, classic white is what I call these ghosts that are kind of misty looking. They're white and they have no distinguishable facial features. So you couldn't recognize them as a human person. Usually they'll have eye spots, maybe something in the mouth and or nose area, but more often than not, just the eye spots. And I captured these. They remind me of a classic white type of Halloween ghost that is drawn, is made into cartoons that you see all over the place during Halloween season, which is why I called them that.
Okay. And then the others, there are some that are images that completely don't resemble humans.
Yes, these things, many photographers call them ghost flares, and for several different reasons, I don't really believe that they are lens flares. Now, originally, photographers used to call it ghosting, and I think that's probably a more accurate term, but they are colors and shapes of light that show up. And one of the reasons why I don't believe that they are anything to do with a lens flare is because they will show up behind objects in the photo. Now, if it was a lens flare, by definition, all of this light-colored being or entity or object, whatever you'd like to call it, would have to be, by definition, in front of everything that's in the photo. Mm-hmm. But I've captured them where it's partially hidden by a part of the house, and so that's one of the reasons. Another reason why I don't believe that is because I've taken several photos in a row and these things have moved and shape-shifted.
Yes.
And by the way, my camera is on a professional grade tripod, so no, the camera didn't move.
And I've had that experience too, where you'll take two or three images side by side and whatever is in the image, there's one that I took by a tree and it's just phenomenal, the different types of orbs that are in it, and it's all one big kind of a glowing blob mass, and it goes from up in an upright position to a kind of a slanted position, and each time the different colors come through, whether it's yellow and red and green, and the colors come through in different spots, and then there's one where it's along just like on the ground, and to me that was like it was going into a portal. That's the way I explain it, but it was amazing because it morphed and then it was gone. It was like three images I got in a sequence, and I was taking a picture of the tree, so I wasn't looking for anything. And I went back, and all of a sudden, I had these images on top overlapping the tree.
I remember, and I remember seeing them and stating definitively that, yeah, that's a paranormal entity. That's not any type of lens flare because of the movement and because of the shape shifting.
Well, I think sometimes, you know, because we've been so conditioned to look for the perfect image, when something like this comes up, then people go, oops, I messed up here, and throw it away. It's like, no, 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 don't throw it away. Take a second
Absolutely.
Look.
Yeah, look yeah. hard, zoom in on those photos and see if there's anything, any type of facial features or sometimes even these color shapes, like I said, are changing and moving. And that right there is evidence. Unless, of course, the camera is moving, but then it's
yeah.
evidence that you have something that's paranormal in nature.
We know that at one point during a Thanksgiving meal, when we were gathered around the table and giving a prayer, and my brother looked above, and as we were saying it, the fan, which isn't turned on, is kind of blinking and turning around. And so we know that house has guests in it. And so during this event, we took a picture of a group scene. And at one point, one of the orbs sits on a person's shoulder, then it moves and comes across, and it ends over the heart of a person who is a guest visiting there. And the obvious transition from one to the other. The camera is in the same position. No lights changed, nothing happened, but that little in the picture, it's a decent sized orb because it kind of covers his heart about a 3-inch in diameter, if you're judging from the size of, you know, what space it covered on the body. And that movement was really easy to track. This kind of stuff, I think, we're still learning about. What would you do with those kinds of orbs? Do you get faces in those?
Every once in a while, I will. Not all the time, but I've come up with some of these photos that, if you look really closely, you'll see a face inside the orb. But of course, you have to zoom in really tight on it.
Mm-hmm.
But people are always dismissing orbs and, again, these light formations that we were just discussing a minute ago that a lot of photographers call lens flares right off the bat. And what they're not thinking about is that these entities, these ghosts, are no longer flesh and blood. They're no longer something that's solid. They are existing as pure energy, and it's electromagnetic energy, and a part of the electromagnetic spectrum is the visible light spectrum. So it's not surprising to me that they move around as small shapes of light, and they can also show themselves in colors like the photo that you were just talking about several minutes ago. And I kind of think that these things that I call them geolite apparitions, that mm-hmm. they have something to do with the auras that people see that are around, for the most part, people's heads.
Yeah.
And somehow, I think that translates into these shapes after the person is dead.
And that makes sense to me, because you're constantly creating your energy, and the dynamic of what you are putting out with your thoughts, with your actions, with all of that carries a color. You're creating an imprint. And I'll add to that. What I ask, I work with spirit guides, and I ask if I could see them. And I wasn't sure what I would get. I got two disc-shaped orange blobs, like a transparent cloud shape about the size of a basketball, a little smaller, across from me. And that was what I was given. As I was going through a house, and this is, you know, 20 years later, I was given a prompt to turn around and look. I turned around and looked and took the picture, because I was taking pictures of getting the house cleaned out and that kind of stuff. I turned around, took the picture, and when I went back to see what was on the picture, there's this beautiful little orange size disc. It's a ball, and it has a bright kind of a yellow, it looks like an orange with a flare in it, some kind of flare. And the reason I believe for me that that is real is because I was prompted to turn around and take the picture. The sun wasn't reflecting off of anything. It was kind of overcast. And here's this picture. And if I hadn't been prompted to take it, I would have thought maybe it was a mistake. However, you can't miss it. It's an incredibly clear shot. But a photographer who's maybe, you know, worked with Photoshop and that kind of stuff might call it lens flare. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, people are dismissing things that they don't understand. I think for the ghosts, that the shape of their former self, the human, is recreated like a hologram. And I'm not sure all of them are capable of doing that. I just have to wonder, because some do and some don't. Perhaps this is something that they learn along the way after they've died. And so I think that we should take this as more of looking into how energy, living intelligent energy, would act, rather than trying to anthropomorphize these things into something that we are familiar with. I think for the ghosts, that the shape of their former selves, the ghost-like appearance, is something that's an anomaly for them in their present condition.
Well, I agree. Part of it, too, I think, is that how recent was the history and how necessary is that particular image? Sometimes I believe a ghost will manifest to us in a shape that we find pleasing or comfortable if they are wanting us to see them. And if they would prefer that we don't stick around, then they give us a shape that they know people will go screaming out of the house. See you, bye. they pick it from us and, reflect it and say, okay, this ought to work. And then people run away and don't bother them. Does that make sense?
It does. And I've seen some of these shapes that are quite scary. And in fact, I just had a woman she was part of the cast of The Ghost of Shepherdstown, and she sent me a few photos last night, and they have some rather creepy looking creatures in it that I've photographed before and one of my friends has photographed before, and they kind of remind me of the Star Wars figures called Jawas. They're in these long dark hooded coats. I don't know if you've ever seen them before, but they seem to show up every once in a while in photographs, and they don't look friendly and they don't look like they mean well.
But, I'm thinking the movie Ghost, where they were hauling everybody off and those little creatures showed up to take them on to the dark world.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So, no, I haven't seen those. Not looking forward to seeing those. Don't need to see those. However, I've had some experiences where they do make their presence known and would prefer that if you're going to mess with them, you better know what you're doing and mind your P's and Q's. And we're going to have to take a quick break here. But my guest again, Tim Skolayan, and this is a book, a couple of them you can check out, but go onto the website and just check out Ghostographer. That's the ones we were talking about, the haunting faces you might see. And you can check out, there are four images there to give you an example of what's going on. But I want to get back with you and talk about, are you collecting photos to share images that people have sent you, because that would be another book. And you said you had several already ready to go. So the next break, let's talk about going forward with this and what's next and what you've learned. Okay. So there's so much going on with this. It's nice to see your work. Again, if you're listening, Ghostographer is one of the websites. And this is a culmination of his work giving tours at a really, really haunted place, haunted town. And it's amazing what happens when you least expect. Wendy's Coffee House, you can check the blog colors or the images there too. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for taking
me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Arr! We be under attack! Man the long nines!
Prepare to be boarded!
Arr! Flagship, starboard bow!
What? No, not by the enemy flagship! By garbage! Me beautiful ocean be full of it these days. It flows in from rivers and drain pipes. Many of folk don't know that when they throw trash on the ground, it eventually makes its way into the ocean. How can I enjoy Sail Me Bonnie Seas with all this trash in it? Why, there's soda pop bottles, plastic bags, even stinky leftover takeout. Fire at will, men! Lend us a hand by always recycling and disposing of your trash properly. If you don't, I'll make you walk me plank. Nah, just kidding. Seriously, though, learn more what you can do to keep the oceans healthy at keepoceansclean.org. Brought to you by the Keep Oceans Clean Alliance and the Ad Council.
Today, you ate Greek yogurt. You took the train. You wondered why people spend so much time reading celebrity blogs. You read a celebrity blog. You planned a workout. You skipped it. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a devastating earthquake shakes the community to the ground. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, it's Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. My guest, Tim Skolion. You can also check him out on Facebook at Tim Skolion Author. And the books, if you're interested in doing some of this, it would be good to take notes and kind of see how he's managed to do it. And I want to go back and revisit that, the WordPress blog where you were taking pictures of Antelope Canyon, because you said you'd been there before and you didn't have the results with this kind of paranormal imagery that you get this time. And the psychic said, hey, they know what you're doing, so they're showing up. I think that's true. I really do. I think the more you intend something and the more you make yourself available, the more you acclimate and adapt, the more you're going to get an engagement from, and, you know, receptivity that you're putting out from something else that says, okay, let's do this. How do you, and again, the book Breakthrough Ghost Photography of Haunted Historic Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia, part two. And part one's already out there. We're talking mostly about part two, but when you're doing this, how do you feel now? You mentioned the cold spots. Do you get that often?
I won't say often, but I've definitely got it at Antelope Canyon. And at the time, the temperature outside was near 110 degrees. And so I knew that something was going on. Although I didn't expect anything to show up in the photograph, I had never heard of any type of a ghost story, any haunting legends about the Antelope Canyon before. As far as I was concerned, I was just going there to take some pictures of a beautiful slot canyon. Mm-hmm. And so when I got it home, I didn't see it right away because it was small. And in that little viewfinder, it was pretty difficult to see. But once I downloaded the photos to my computer, I could obviously see that bluish mist when all of the rocks in the area were either an orange or a gold or a black or a purple color. Bluish whitish mist showed up, and mm-hmm. you could make out multiple faces in the mist. And what was interesting is after I was there and I had taken these photos and I had put up this blog that you're referencing, that I got a message from somebody that had taken the tour and learned that there was a group of Native Americans that were in the canyon right after a rainstorm. And out in the southwest, the rain doesn't soak into the ground well. It washes away, and it washes through these places like these slot canyons. And this group of Native Americans were caught unawares, and they were all drowned in that canyon. So I'm thinking that that's who I met that particular afternoon, and that's who showed up.
Yeah, that might be some of that energy. Yeah, those faces are phenomenal, and you can see it. And those slot canyons—they're beautiful. They're so gorgeous with all the imagery, the different colors of the lights, how it plays out. But you're also showing in here some of the spots where the light is going in a way that it shouldn't be going. You see the sunlight streaking down, and then there's this little feature, a little cloud, wispy thing that goes off to the right in one of the images,
exactly.
And saying, "Hey,
so
that's not supposed to happen."
Light doesn't behave. Light doesn't work like that. Yeah.
Okay. So what have you, in taking your pictures from when you first started, you said you were a skeptic. So how did this play out?
Well, obviously I'm not a skeptic anymore. I've got too much proof to show me that there is another side, and that not only is there an other side, but it's alive and well, and there are a lot of ghosts out there. There hasn't been a place that I've gone where I haven't been able to capture ghosts on camera. It's just been an amazing odyssey for me.
Where have you gone to give people an idea of what we're talking about? Because you've done some traveling.
Okay. I've gone to the Outer Banks of North Carolina. By the way, that's called the Graveyard of the Atlantic. So there are a lot of ghosts there. But I was on vacation and wasn't really expecting ghosts there either, but they showed up. I've been to Charleston, South Carolina. I've been to Gettysburg and Washington, D.C. And when I was out in the Southwest this last time, I decided to go to several places that I had seen featured on the paranormal TV shows. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to go to these same places that the TV shows had gone and see if I could get photographic proof of the ghosts that they claimed were there. And so I went to Jerome, Arizona, to the Grand Hotel, and also on the streets. And I got some interesting photos there, a couple of them there and at Williams, Arizona, that I was able to partially match up to old photographs taken. Now, the one in Jerome was taken in the early 1900s of a young man, 18 or 19, and his name was William Vogel. And the face I got in the window of the same building pretty much looked like him, although you can't see the mouth area, but the eyes look very similar. Mm-hmm. And out in Williams, Arizona, I went to the Red Garter, and I captured the face of a man that possibly looks like the owner there, Longino. And that was interesting that I was able to capture anything there, because it was, everything was so dark in that area. But besides those two places, I went to a place where the Dead Files went. That's in Sedona, Arizona. It's a restaurant called Relics. Mm-hmm. And I got quite an array of characters in the windows there, including some that I wasn't inspecting because it didn't match with any of the stories that had been told about the place. So lots of different places out in the Southwest and lots of different stories that just add to this odyssey that I've been on.
Well, yeah, and I'm familiar with Sedona and Jerome. Jerome's one of my favorite places to go, just because of that. The view over the desert. It's captivating. There's an art building that it's changed hands. It used to be a bookstore. It's been an arts gallery, and I think recently it's still an artist gallery. But there, the feeling you get from going to different places, the energy shifts, and being in the canyons and all that. So I think it's very alive with history that predates anything that we have written about or maybe even talked about. So I think some of that imagery is also influencing what you're picking up. You do see in this. On the website, I'm looking at the WordPress site, going behind the paranormal television shows, Jerome, Arizona, that hotel, the imagery across the top of that. What did you think about that? The windows, that's a really spectacular flare. Looks like a portal.
You think so?
Yeah, because of the way the energy's going, it looks like something is you know, can go through or went through from a different, I mean, that's how I would interpret that.
Well, I'm not psychic in any way. I can't really interpret my feelings, but the photographs, they speak for just how haunted the whole Jerome area is. I've got so many faces in the Grand Hotel, but besides the Grand Hotel, I've gone to places that are on the street. For example, the photo that I was talking about before, it's in a little boutique called the Firefly. Mm-hmm. And I've also captured what looks like an old miner or cowboy standing right on the street. Now, he's a little bit wispy, a little bit ephemeral, so you can't see the features fully, but you can definitely tell that it's a miner or a cowboy.
Well, you can see that face. Yeah, the apparition in front of, I see that with the green and the different colors in it, and you can see the face up there by a white, basically a kind of a white flash. I think what people are fascinated by is the fact that there are so many of these photos that you're bringing to light, and you're I think calling attention to new ways of looking at these images and not discounting it because it's not a perfect picture. It's a perfect picture with an extra element.
Yeah, and with that said, I've got to say that more often than not, I do not get perfect pictures. And so I usually don't publish them. Usually the faces are distorted. In some cases, for example, an eye might be a little bit high to the left, or the face might be a little bit too wide or a little bit too long. And so I don't show those because they don't look normal. They don't look human enough. And some people just won't accept it. But mm-hmm. I've got to say that that is the norm rather than the exception.
One of the most unique photos I know taken here in my area, Weston, and that's also a town with a lot of a bloody history. And so there's a lot of activity there. There's a house called the Price Loyal's House. And the people who this year they did it had a Christmas tour, so you could go through and feel the energy of the space, go through the rooms, look at the inside, all the renovation work they've done. When they were first rehabbing and restoring the property, they put in an antique bed in the room, bed and dresser. And so, of course, you know, taking pictures to document, look at our progress. They just snapped a picture. Nothing was in the room. Nobody, in terms of, you know, a person. It was an empty room with just the furnishings. When they came back and looked at the pictures, there was a couple standing right there to be able to be seen in the mirror, reflected in the mirror, with period clothing. They were dressed the maybe 20s, 30s, and that image was there as just as if they had been standing in the room. And these guys weren't the kind who believed in ghosts either, but they definitely bought themselves a very haunted building. And so, you know, like you, the skeptic part, once you've stayed in a place like that two or three nights, you kind of change your views. And they're now happy to put it on the home tour and say, yep, it's haunted.
Yeah, there you go. It's so, funny that you mentioned that, because I just got a report by some friends of mine that the greenhouse store in Colonial Williamsburg is being remodeled on the inside. And because of that, it's making the ghosts there very distraught. And so yes, they're appearing to these workmen and in some cases scaring them so that they won't come back to work.
Okay. I've had a little of experience with that. Going to a couple of places, one where I went into a house, we were rehabbing properties at the time. And this is like, you know, maybe a decade back or so. And, taking a tour, every single room in this particular house was undone. It had been started and almost completed and then not finished through the whole house. It was like three stories. And when I left that house, I had something pinching one of my fingers, like a crab had latched onto it. I'm like, what the? One of the first times I realized that they could do that, a little attachment. And at that point I knew, no, you do not want to go anywhere near this house. This is no. But that was the message they were sending, that whoever was in there is like, no, you're not going to fix it. We like it just the way it is. And this is a drama you get into when you're trying to go into properties and they have residual energy. Is that there's sometimes when you have to decide, is it worth it? There's another house I went into and I bargained. I said, okay. And they said, fix everything but the kitchen. Fine. Everything but the kitchen. And I knew that once I touched the kitchen, it would upset the rest of the house. And so when we went back and then revisited and asked permission, and the house cooperated, but it was a haunted house. And that's the way they just, you're living with guests, and necessarily you are the guest, maybe, you know, because we're temporary and these guys get to stick around. So, do you live in a haunted house? You're in an area that's highly active. Are you in a haunted house by chance?
I've lived in several haunted houses.
And how does that work?
Well, Let me give you a perfect example. Now, the house that I'm going to tell you about is a house that just burned down last September. Unfortunately, I lost all my camera equipment. I've been trying to recuperate from that fire ever since.
Wow.
But that house, it had two apparitions. Now, I captured more in the windows, but it had two apparitions that regularly showed up. And we had a Cox type of security system where it had a camera, an infrared camera that was shining on the front door. And mm-hmm. we had a little monitor screen in the kitchen. And every once in a while, we could see in the monitor screen that there was a pixelated outline of two people that were either walking down the hallway or walking up the stairs. So I had proof there. In fact, I was saving some of those images, but I lost them in the fire.
Darn it. Okay. Was there anything suspicious about the fire? Had you had any kind of inkling that this was an unsettling, that the house was, you know, morphing or dangerous?
No, I've had a lot of people that were psychic told me about that, and I've seen instances where ghosts can start fires. I've been to several of these different places, particularly in Colonial Williamsburg, but no, the fire marshal determined that it was an unlit cigarette that a visitor had left on the porch.
Wow. There's a place in Weston, and my experience with this is sometimes they're trying to get your attention because there is an issue. Something won't work because there's something else that needs to be fixed or replaced. And once you do that, then everything calms down. There was a building right next door. A woman lived in a house next door to a place where a guy's place had burned down and he died in the fire. Next door, she started experiencing these hauntings. It would wake her, you know, she'd feel something on her face at night. She'd wake up and she was really getting a bit perturbed because this is scaring her and making her uncomfortable. Her son comes over, and at one point, I don't know how they determined that he needed to look into something, but he checked the wiring in the attic and it was exposed, and there could have been, it was a fire hazard. And once they fixed that, all of that stuff stopped. And there's still a little bit of activity, but not like that. It was really trying to get her attention so that that could be taken care of. And so to me, some of this stuff, it isn't always a negative. It's like, wake up before it's too late, you know? And I do think that even though they might make us feel uncomfortable sometimes, there are in a lot of cases, it's in our best interest to pay attention and see, well, okay, what's the message, and go from there. Do you think you're in a, are you going to be traveling some more? Are you, what's the next plan for your tour, for your books?
Well, I've got two books in the works right now. One of them that I'm got just about done, and that's Southeastern Virginia. And that's because there are so many places in this area that need to be looked at. And a lot of them are plantations from the 18th and the 19th century. And some of the places are historical. For example, in Richmond, I've gone to the Confederate White House. There's John Marshall. He was the fourth Supreme Court Justice. His original home is there. I've also am excited to try to document something at the Poe Museum. But once Southeastern Virginia is finished, I've already started on the Southwest, where I'm going into places in Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and Colorado.
That'll be excellent. Those places just have a different energy, too. Once you start identifying how it feels, you can pick up on some of the nuances. And like you said, in that Slot Canyon, you're getting these little brushing of cold spot. And it's not cold. It's really hot. And all of a sudden with this cold, you know, you get that little ice cubey thing. It's like, and you were realizing that they might have been walking behind you to try to set up for the next image. I thought that was a good way of paying attention to what was going on.
Absolutely. And I try to pay attention to these nuances, although I'm not as aware of them as perhaps somebody like you or some of my psychic friends are, but I go on alert if I feel cold spots or any other indications that there's something paranormal going on. And I've got my camera out and ready in those cases.
Well, and I think part of it is, even if you're not aware, the more you work with this and the more you are acclimating and connecting dots of how it works best for you, the more you're developing your talent. I don't think you have to be predisposed to, oh, I'm going to go out and take the world's best ghost photos. I think sometimes you just all of a sudden, like you have done, are in the right place, right time, fall into it, and you're curious, well, how do I get this, and how do I make it better, and what if? And so you're experimenting as you're getting these pictures and developing and honing your skill. And I think that's what people can learn from, is that there are no mistakes. There's just another opportunity to try it a different way.
Absolutely. And let me give you another example. Is that time that I captured the ghost militia in front of the Powder magazine, I took between 40 and 50 photos of that area that night, and the ghost militia only showed up in one. So not only do they move extremely fast, I've got evidence of that in many photos, but they only may be there for you to photograph for a split second, and then they vanish.
I think part of that is like, okay, if you're really paying attention and it's worth your while, you will be on heightened alert. And if you're not, then they really don't have time to waste on you.
There you
go. Like, you know, we don't have all night. Well, maybe they do, but, you know, technically it's on their time, not ours. One of the professional photographers I interviewed, and I can't remember how long, it's been quite a while ago, Paul Nicklin. And what he said was he takes thousands of photos. And I think that's the key is it, this isn't just, I'm going to take one picture. If you get one picture and get a result, that's fantastic. And I've been lucky enough to do that occasionally. But when you're really looking for something and you're trying to examine and experiment and research, the dedication that comes through in taking hundreds, 50, 40 of one spot gives you an opportunity to see what happens as the energy shifts, as the twilight gets deeper, as the sun changes. All this stuff is constantly in a state of flux. It's moving and we're breathing and that changes things. So I think I'm glad you're exploring and you're investigating because it's giving people images to work with and different ways of seeing this. For anybody who wants to debunk it, that's fine. But for somebody who said, I didn't start out this way and this is what I'm getting. Wow. That's a lot of times how it starts. It's that thing of, I didn't expect it, but look what I'm finding. Have you, at this point, you have any regrets?
No regrets at all. It's turned into a passion. I've become engrossed with it. Perhaps obsessed with it. It's just something that's completely dominated my life these last few years because I just want more and more evidence so that one day I can look back and say, yeah, I proved it definitively that they are there, that there are real ghosts, that they exist. And there are also other different types of spirit light forms out there that are existing alongside them too.
My question, is there any place you wouldn't go?
Not that I know of. No.
Okay.
I'm up for it. You got any suggestions?
No. Well, places where there have been horrific crimes and really atrocities, you know, there's energy about that I kind of stay away from to be respectful of. This isn't something I'm going to get into. So I just wondered, you know, if there were any places that you felt that maybe you wouldn't be comfortable.
I've been at a place called Crawford Road here in Virginia. It's close to Yorktown. And Crawford Road was the site of two battles. One was a Revolutionary War battle, and that's where the French army was stationed. And during the Civil War, that's where the Union army was stationed. So obviously there would have been casualties on both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there have been seen by people as they drove along this road, the ghosts of African Americans that have been lynched. So I guess back in the day, this might have been the place where they did all their lynchings.
Yeah.
And then interestingly enough, since 1990, 5 people have been killed on this road. So I've been to a place just like you're speaking about, and I had some bizarre happenings there. That was the first place that I ever heard a paranormal scream. And
yeah.
It was a woman screaming, and I heard it 3 times. And the weird thing about it was that it wasn't at ground level. It sounded like it was about 20 or 30 feet up in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we looked up there, and obviously there wasn't anything up there.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works. It's there, just not on our plane. Hey, Tim, I really appreciate you doing what you're doing. Thank you for talking to me. This is the second interview, so I put you through a few hoops. But give your website so people can connect with you and follow up. And then and we're looking forward to seeing what you divulge when you start saying, hey, this is how it works. How do they connect now?
All right. Well, the Ghostographer website, ghostographer.com, that's for a tour that I do of Colonial Williamsburg, where I take people to the various houses and I show them the photos that I've gotten on a large Samsung. It's like a tablet, and I show them the photos, and I always encourage people to take photos themselves because that's veracity that what I've gotten if they get it. And the WordPress site is where I put my musings about various places that I've been that aren't in my books, or places that I hope to put in my books. And that's timskullion@wordpress.com.
Yeah, and that's where we saw, I'm looking at the pictures of from Jerome and the Slot Canyon and that area in Arizona. These places are fantastic, and there's so much that we can learn as we continue to just kind of explore and say, what if, instead of it can't happen? What if, maybe, curious, that helps pull us forward. So I hope to stay in touch and reconnect with you as you continue to take your photos, because I think this is a fascinating journey that you've ended up on, and hopefully you'll find houses that aren't quite so haunted they burn themselves down in the future.
Absolutely.
That's not fair. That's just not fair. But yeah, once you've been in a place like that, you might be able to hear a few more things and expand your horizons. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we exit here?
No, I think we've got a hold of everything. It's been great talking with you, and great exploring the unknown. And I hope to have more and more proof of the unknown as I go on.
I have no doubt you will. All right. Well, thank you for listening. And you can check out the blog site. My blog, it's Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot. And I do have the ghost photos, unlike any of you seen. It's one of the top ones right now over for viewers. So it'll pop right up for the most part. If you go on there on the sidebars, it'll show you. But there's a picture there that I call the Watcher. I have no explanation for how it appeared. I do know it was in my house, and it made me feel at first like, oh my gosh. Then I realized, oh, it was working for me, not against me. And that's the way I decided to reconcile it, because nothing bad happened. It was just a way of saying, we've got your back. And that's how I feel about a lot of these places. So Tim Scullion, my guest, you can check out the book or the books and find out more about ghosts and the haunted tours of Williamsburg at Ghostographer. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time. Stay curious.